GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1289, March 2nd, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Of course, the name of that is Kalamazoo, and that is by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from home. Had kind of a, I don't know, it was a bit of a lazy day today. I did drive up and I met my friend Gene up in Bella Vista for lunch, and then afterwards I came home and then kind of ended up turning on the television and watching some of the stuff off of the DVR, and then I finally got tired of that and I turned it off, and then I called my middle brother, talked to him for probably 2 hours, and then since then I've just kind of been on the computer, kind of cleaning once again, cleaning the hard drive off, you know, moving, archiving podcasts off and kind of getting rid of stuff I no longer need. And that's a never-ending task. You know, the computers are always, you know, you always keep, especially if you're creating media, the thing fills up at just an incredibly quick rate. And so you got to, you know, I've got plenty of external hard drives, but so periodically I archive the, you know, I keep a copy of all my old podcasts. So I archive all that stuff off and kind of free the space back up so that I can continue to use the machine. But, and today was another day where it was about 45 degrees, and you know, and I don't know. I think it's going to be like that for the rest of the week. It's kind of getting a little bit below freezing, you know, at night, and then during the daytime it ends up kind of warming up to around 40, you know, somewhere in the 40s, and then, you know, so it makes it, it's still kind of cool. Really, you need some sort of a jacket if you're going to be outside very long, you know, but makes it a little bit too cool to really be able to go outside and enjoy spending very much time outside. You know, now if you're dressed for it, it'd be fine, but so I don't know, but it is a whole lot better than, you know, than snow and you know, and 20 degrees colder. Yeah, you may have to meet with clients and colleagues face-to-face. Problem is, you may have a tight budget, and business travel is expensive and time-consuming. That's why I recommend doing more and traveling less by holding online meetings with GoToMeeting. For just $49 a month, you can hold as many meetings as you want. It's so easy. You'll have your first meeting running in seconds. Use GoToMeeting to collaborate with colleagues and clients. Save time and money. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free 30-day trial. So, Elena, a.k.a. Stamp Gal, on Twitter, sent me a tweet, a direct tweet, about, apparently there was some gal somewhere, and I'm not really sure where, she had live tweeted her, basically, I guess it was an abortion, and, you know, and so, you know, and there in this tweet that Elena sent, there's a link, and you click on the link, and it takes you to a YouTube video where she's kind of talking about it. And so I watched that, and then I this woman's she's in her 20s or early 20s, and she kind of comes across as really, you know, in this initial video that I watched, she comes across, she's an atheist and she's proud of it and so on and so forth. And she's constantly putting down religion. And then, you know, so it's easy to have a knee jerk reaction from her. But then I watched some of her other videos, and, you know, and so what I'm going to do, I've got the videos, I've stripped off the audio, and so I can play the audio, and then I don't know how many of these I'm going to play. I don't know if I'm going to play all of them, but I'm going to play enough, you know, because what she has done, you know, and it's kind of self-explanatory once you begin to listen to what she says in some of her other videos. She was raised in a religious cult, and, you know, the really extreme kind of, you know, in an extreme sort of situation. And so now she, of course, she resented that, and now she's trying to do the opposite and rebel against it. And even though she, in her own mind, she thinks she's being reasonable and what have you, she's obviously, she's kind of going to the opposite extreme, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, she, I guess, you know, according to her, she's been an atheist about a year and a half, and before that, she really believed whatever the, you know, whatever the religious cult that she was raised in, she really believed, and it sounds kind of like it was some sort of a really extreme version of, you know, some sort of, you know, Christian something or other. Or at least they call themselves Christian, you know, they're doing the name Christian a disservice. But in any case, she's now, because she resents the failings of that and the failings of her parents, she's simply becoming, she may think she's the opposite, and she's trying to free people from religion, is what she says, but, you know, and religion's evil and so on and so forth, but she's simply an extension of them. You know, she may think she's the opposite, but she's not. And she's not her own person yet. Whether, you know, she's deluded herself into thinking she is, but she's not. So in any case, I'm going to play this one where she's talking about, let me see if I can find it here. Okay, there it is. She's talking about her abortion. And this is about 2 minutes and 35 seconds, so let's go ahead and listen to that.
Hi, YouTube. This is Angie the Antitheist. This is not a scripted video, so I apologize for the higher incidence of ums and you knows. I found out about a week ago, Saturday, that I was pregnant for a variety of reasons, including very high health risks for me. I am having an abortion right now. They have abortion by pill now, RU486. I went to the doctor, Planned Parenthood, had blood tests and everything else done. They did a sonogram to check the state of my pregnancy. I was at only 4 weeks one day when I went into the office on Thursday. They sent me home with some medicines. I've taken those. They take a while to set in. I ended up actually going and getting a second dose. I'm having an abortion right now. It's not that bad. It's not that scary. It's basically like a miscarriage. I'm live tweeting my abortion on Twitter. Not for some publicity stunt or attention or to justify this to myself. I am at peace with my decision. I'm doing this to demystify abortion. I'm doing this so that other women know, hey, it's not nearly as terrifying as I had myself worked up thinking it was. It's just not that bad. This is nothing compared to childbirth, compared to labor, compared to, for me and my risks, late stage pregnancy. This is the best choice, and it's not that bad. And I want people to know that it's out there. That if you need this, there's non-surgical options available, especially in the earliest stage of pregnancy. Obviously, everybody uses protection. Sometimes that doesn't work. And when it doesn't, there's the morning after pill. And if you're not in time for that, there's RU486. So I just want to let everybody know that you too can have an abortion if you want one. It's okay. It's not shameful. It's not secret. It's not killing a child. I have a little boy. You guys have seen him on my video channel. He is my world. I want to stay alive and be his mom a lot longer. So I'm having an abortion. I hope everybody on YouTube has a great and godless day. Peace.
Okay, so what she's doing there, she says, well, I'm doing this to demystify it. And she says that, but what she's really doing, and she may not even realize it. I don't think she does, because she comes across as very sincere. But I think what she's doing is promoting it, and she's looking for sympathy in a way. Not that's really the wrong word. She wants to promote it as a means of... She's reinforcing it in her mind, but she wants to promote it as a means of kind of keeping the guilt of what she's doing at bay. And we see this in all kinds of different groups of people that are guilty for various reasons. We're all, you know, we all have different guilt, and guilt does not just come, you know, it's not something that religion puts on you. Guilt is a natural thing, you know, because there is this thing called conscience. And whether you believe in any kind of religion or not, or any kind of religious doctrine or ideas of right and wrong, there is a natural, latent ethics that human beings, you know, it's not forced on us, but that conscience is there. And it's just as natural as your foot is. It's just as natural as your hand is. It's just as natural as your head is. It's part of our development as human beings. We have this thing, you know, that, you know, is there kind of whispering to us the difference between right and wrong. And then it's up to us to make the choice. And of course, if we make the wrong choice, then we feel guilty because we're making the inferior response. And so therefore, one of the things that people do, they go into denial, but one of the ways of denial, it's kind of like, you know, there's this book that was written, I'm Okay, You're Okay. And so she's looking for other people to reinforce. She's reinforcing her own resolve against her conscience, and then she needs these other people to kind of help her along and make her feel better about her choice. So in a way, she's joining another cult. She was born and raised in a religious cult, and then now she has the resentment against her parents and you know, the other people in her family. Is primarily, it started against her parents. She's got that resentment, and so now she thinks she's going to do the opposite, but she's basically joined another cult. She's joined the abortion cult. And she's also, before that, she joined the atheist cult. And it's if you can find a group of people, it would be like going to a bar and kind of crying in your beer and find other people that'll drink with you, and you can all kind of cry in your beer and compare sob stories and so on and so forth. You know, and the bartender's there to kind of keep, you know, take advantage of your decay and kind of, you know, sell you drinks and keep serving you drinks. And as you all sit there and kind of commiserate, misery loves company. And so now she's in the atheist cult and the abortion cult. But, it would be easy, you know, if that's the only video of hers that you watched, it would be easy to have a knee-jerk reaction and say, oh, she's wrong, terrible, terrible, horrible, horrible. But let's go ahead. You know, now we're going to go into some of the other, she's got a bunch of other videos. And let's see, which one should we do here? Well, this one is called How I Woke Up. And this is basically, she tells the story about how and why she left she was in college and she decided to leave the religion and, you know, and kind of do what she thinks is the opposite, basically, even though she doesn't say that. So let's listen to this. This is her video, How I Woke Up.
What's up, YouTube? It's Angie the Anti-Theist. And today I'm going to talk about how I became an atheist. In about a year and a half ago, I became an atheist, March of 2008. So it's almost 2 years now. I was in college as a dual major in Middle East studies and early U.S. history. Been taking a couple of semesters of classes in each of these subjects, and I was really fascinated by both. I was taking a class on women in Islam, and I was taking a class on Middle Eastern and North African politics, and a class on Andrew Jackson and the United States from 1800 to 1850. And that set of knowledge basically kicked around in my head and led to some interesting places. Making friends with the girls from Sisters United Muslim Association, SUMA, on campus. They were so sweet and nice, and they were friendly to me. I was a single mom with a kid, and on the Friday afternoon meetings when, you know, we'd meet and they'd read Quran verses and, you know, talk about one of Muhammad's women and, like, tell a little moral lesson about these women, which I'll give Islam that. They have way more named women characters of a major role once you add in the Hadith than the Bible does. But, you know, they were nice. They were sweet. They were accepting of me as a single mom. They didn't mind when I had to bring my kid with me. They didn't drink alcohol or party or get arrested or have sex or, you know, they were so, like, the model that every Christian family I knew was shooting for with their daughters. Like, these girls were there, you know? They were, you know, if they hadn't been wearing hijab and if they'd held a Bible in their hand instead of a Quran, any of the, Christian boys I know, their moms would have been all over. You know, they were nice, family-oriented, academically-oriented, honest, good people. And my religion said that they were going to hell, and their religion said that I was going to hell. And that bothered me, how we could, you know, both be nice people and have to think that the other one was going to hell. And I didn't for a second, I never believed Muhammad was, you know, prophet or any of that. Like, I just knew in that, you know, not knowledge-based, but emotionally-based, I knew that was a false religion and a false god and a story written by men. But I didn't think that about the Bible. I somehow thought that they were completely different in that respect. And I didn't believe it. Maybe temporal lobe seizure. Maybe he's like Joseph Smith and he's just making it up. I don't know. But I'm not going to first jump to, all the, you know, divinity claims and, you know, differences from, you know, my Bible that I read. You know, all of those. You know, there was no reason to believe that all of those were true for me. There was nothing compelling about it. And so I tried to see what did my religion have that hers didn't, since I knew mine was the one that was true. I mean, that wasn't even something I doubted. It was just, how could I witness to them? How could I show them Christ's love, basically. At the same time that was going on in history class, we were reading about cults and the starting of different little religious sects and, you know, the Second Great Awakening religious revival movement across the U.S., the founding of the Quakers and the Mormons and, you know, the Seventh-day Adventists and the Oneida Utopia, which was a polyamorous planned community. Populations were scheduled. It was very odd, very, you know, off the beaten, unique, you know, thing that they tried, social experiment, whatever you want to call it, you know. And everybody in class is just flabbergasted, like, this is batshit, and I'm the one that's, you know, finding it all oddly familiar. Which led me to Google, where I looked up my grandmother's name and found out that she is a cult leader. I found article after article after article of children that had died of medical neglect from their parents following her teachings. You know, a woman who died in childbirth, leaving 5 kids behind because she followed my grandmother's teachings. Becoming an atheist happened really quickly after that. It wasn't just that. It was sort of everything all together. The failure of faith healing, my grandmother being a cult leader, not really having any idea how to tell what was true, because there really wasn't any more evidence for Christianity than there was for Islam. And I knew Islam wasn't true. All kind of knocked around in my head for a while. I found a Why Won't God Heal Amputees video, and that was it. Now I'm an anti-theist and trying to spread the gospel of atheism far and wide. I hope everybody on YouTube has a great and godless day. Take care of yourselves. Have fun.
Okay, so it's very obvious that she resented her parents. And then, you know, then it didn't take much to, and obviously, I mean, it's obvious to me that she did come from a religious cult. You know, and as she said, her grandmother was a cult leader. So, it did, because of the existing resentment she had towards her parents, it didn't take her, you know, didn't take much to, you know, to get her to go and, you know, to rebel and go in the opposite direction, or what she thinks is the opposite direction, but she's still not herself. And of course, I'm sure she doesn't realize that, but she thinks she's going in the opposite direction, and she's not, you know. So, but in any case, let's go ahead and let's see. There's two more. I'm going to go ahead and play this one. It's called it says Atheist Mom is what she named it.
Hi YouTube, this is Angie the Anti-Theist. I'm having a ton of annoying errors and problems trying to record this. So hopefully this one goes live. Basically, a lot of people have been asking me questions about being an atheist mother. For the most part, being an atheist parent is being a parent. It's diaper changes and parent-teacher conferences and school lunches and skin knees and temper tantrums and hugs and go clean your rooms. It's going to be pretty universal across the Western American experience, at least. I'd imagine my son has a lot in common with most kids of his, you know, ability level and socioeconomic status. The fact that, you know, the majority of those kids in this country would be in Christian families and he's not, I don't think is the thing that makes him most unique in this world or most like somebody else. It matters to me a lot to be honest with my son. And so I don't tell him that Santa Claus is true. I also, though, don't want to be so afraid of ideas like my fundamentalist family was. So we've got Bob the Builder books and Blue's Clues, and we've also got Bible stories, and I don't treat them as being any different. I treat them to be similarly fictional. You know, I think when you keep a child from something, when you forbid it, I think that often makes it more appealing. I mean, Adam and Eve tree, don't touch that fruit, of course, you know. Human nature, we want to, you know, test the limits, or why not? And, you know, I think I don't want to act like I'm not scared of Christianity in terms of, like, that the idea itself is so appealing. Absent the cultural context that supports the delusion and the, you know, child indoctrination and generational nature of religion, I don't think people would, you know, I don't think people would look at these sets of ideas for the first time at, say, age 40, having never heard any of this, and living in a secular world, and see it and say, my God, that makes perfect sense. Whereas that was my experience with materialistic naturalism. Just like, oh, it makes sense. The world doesn't have miracles and faith healing isn't happening. But I guess the, you know, the another thing people ask is, you know, how would I feel if my son became religious? And I guess, one, I'm fairly confident that my son will be a free thinker. You know, I'm not somebody who has a neutral stance on religion. And I do share my opinions. And
okay, now I want to interrupt right there. She wants her son to become a free thinker. And that's actually a good thing if she can pull it off. But I guarantee you that she can't, because she's not. And her son, because there's no, you know, I haven't heard her, you know, in any of the videos that I watched, there's no father mentioned. Her son is going to resent the fact that there's no father. Whether there's one that's, you know, that's just off in the wing somewhere, and or maybe they don't even know who the father is. Kid's going to resent that. He's going to resent the fact. He's going to resent the mother. And therefore, that puts him in a box. Just like his mom is in a box, because his mom is full of resentment. And she's in the box. She thinks she's escaped from the box. She thinks she's doing the opposite, but she's still in the box. Resentment puts you in a box. Whether you're aware of it or not, most of the time people aren't even aware. They, oh, I love my parents. I love my mother. I love my dad. They're lying to themselves. Resentment puts you in a box, but not only does it put you in a box, it cuts you off from your common sense. It cuts you off from who you could be, who you could become. And it also makes you increasingly sensitive. As you go through your life, you know, and you're in denial, and you add, you know, resentment on top of resentment on top of resentment, you become increasingly sensitive to the world. And that begins to affect your immune system as well. And so then your immune system can be, you know, begin to react to the world. You know, people end up with all kinds of asthma and you know, different allergies, so on and so forth, and that's sort of reflecting an increased sensitivity. And then also you know you get into all kinds of autoimmune diseases, and there's just a myriad of things that can go wrong once your immune system begins to be affected by this buried resentment. And then the perverted emotions that result from that. We have natural emotions, but those natural emotions are not, you know, if you have hidden resentment, or it maybe sometimes people are proud of the resentment, and they just, you know, they're proud of it. Either way, resentment ends up amplifying and turning emotions, perverting emotions into something they should never be. You know, hyping them up to really dangerous levels. And that ends up causing all kinds of, eventually it ends up causing all kinds of physical problems. And so, in any case, her son is in the box. He's not going to be a free thinker. He's just going to be an extension of his mom. His mom is not a free thinker. She thinks she's free, but she's not. She's enslaved. And you can hear the resentment in her voice. If you just listen carefully, you can hear it. So let me go ahead and finish playing this file.
And beliefs and stances and reasons with the people around me for holding the views of religion and, you know, charity and the world around us that I do. The difference between indoctrination and influence, as Dale McGowan of Parenting Beyond Belief, whose videos I'm totally linking over on the side, he described the difference between indoctrination and influence. Influence is letting your kids know what you value and why. Indoctrination is not allowing them to see any other options. So my kid does have Bible stories on his bookshelf in his room. You live across the street from a giant church. He's one of his school, you know, public school teachers is a Sunday school teacher. The vast majority of his extended family are Christian. Even if I could, even if I wanted to, I couldn't protect him from Christianity in the way that I, as a child, was protected from non-Christians. It, simply the numbers aren't in my favor in for that kind of scenario. I also don't want to. I don't want to tell my son what to think. I want to teach him how to think and how to empathize and how to problem solve. And how to see beyond the privilege that he's lucky enough to get to have as somebody born white and male in America. You know, I want to teach him how to think critically, to evaluate things, and to reach his own conclusions. When I was a Christian, I loved being a middle school Sunday school teacher. That was my favorite age group, which... you know, most people consider middle schoolers a very problem age. But I guess for me, it was a really exciting age. And I saw them as being kids who were just starting to form their own identities and decide for themselves, you know, the nature of their faith. You know, there was all that exciting, you know, rededicating and revivals. But there was also... kids, you know, coming up with their own interpretations to the scripture, not the ones that their parents necessarily had, or really asking themselves, well, how do I feel about gay marriage or abortion? And I just found that a really exciting time. I would have rather had kids that had good reasons for their beliefs than kids who just believed because their parents did. And I feel that way about my kid, too. Well, yes, I think it would be great if everybody dropped the fairy tales right now and we were all atheists. Don't expect that to happen. Not even a little bit, as much as I might fantasize about it. But I actually wouldn't want everyone to just stop believing because I told them to. Because then that would just still have the underlying problem. Religion is a huge problem, but it's also a symptom of a problem. It's a symptom of bad thinking. And I want to prevent that. And I think the best way to do that is to teach someone how to think. Because who knows? My son might be a great deal smarter than I am. And if I just tell him to do everything that I do, it's like never having any, you know, positive genetic variation. It's just... a clone. I don't want my kid to be a clone. I want to find out who he is. I'm already here. So, I don't...
Okay, let me interrupt once again. He will be a clone if he resents her. And he does. You know, and there may be some videos where her son is in the video, but I know how this works. You know, so I haven't seen her son, but I know that he resents her because that's the human, we all do it. We all start out resenting our parents, and that's especially true if there's no dad present. And so she's, I don't know, she's got, you know, some, I think she's got some good intentions, really. But I think she's at this point misguided. And again, she thinks that she's gotten out of the box. But because of the resentment that she has towards her parents, the way she was raised, etc., 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 she is still trapped, and she's still in the box. And she's got the illusion. Right now, she's trying to do the opposite, but she's still in the box, and her son, therefore, is going to be in the box with her. He already is, and. You know, so, you know, the only way out of it, of course, is to, you know, to really look at, she'd have to really look at herself and become aware of her own resentment towards her parents and the way she was raised, etc., etc. And it's, you know, if you can hear it in her voice that she resents the way she was raised. She, you know, she's trying to do the opposite, so on and so forth. And that's not enough. You know, she's just, in other words, she's trying to compensate. And compensation really doesn't work.
I think that he will become a religious believer. I certainly would not prefer that for my son. But the things that matter most to me are that he is self-sufficient, ethical, loving, and loved. It's kind of it. It's kind of the same thing everybody wants for their kids, right? You want them to succeed in life, you want them to be happy, and you want them to be good people. And you really don't need God for that. So that's being an atheist mom from my perspective. If anybody else is an atheist parent and wants to add your comments, or if anybody else has more questions on this, feel free to let me know. As always, you can check out my blog at angietheantitheist.blogspot.com. You can follow me on Twitter at antitheistangie. And please remember to donate to mycharitywater.org/angieantitheist for the well project that we're raising money for. Thank you so much, and everybody have a great and godless day. Peace.
And what she is doing, of course, she's the new god is government. That's, you know, you're going to worship something. You're going to have a god of some sort. And, you know, for people that become atheists, or they think they become atheists, the new god is government. And, you know, you can hear the typical liberal, left-leaning, socialist-leaning thing. Well, at the one point she said, well, not everybody's a white male, you know, that type of thing. And that's, so she's falling right into the, it's all totally predictable. And again, she thinks she's outside the box, but she's in the same box. She just doesn't realize it. So this next one, she's got a lot more videos in this, but I've only captured four of them. But this last one I'm going to play, she says, well, why an atheist, like as in her, why she talks about religion all the time. And that's another thing that I've noticed about a lot of self-professed atheists, is that they're constantly talking about religion for some reason.
Hey, YouTube. This is Angie the Antitheist. I get asked a whole lot, why do you care about religion, or why do atheists care about religion if you don't even believe in this stuff? Now, I can't answer for anyone else. There is no atheist consensus. I live with two other atheists, and one of them just thinks religion is funny. One of them doesn't know what religion is. I think religion is dangerous. I also think it's fascinating, and I always have. I mean, I grew up in an incredibly spiritual, if you will, home. Prayers were constant. Reading the Bible was constant. Discussing things like eternity and the end times and angels in our midst. And all of this stuff was everyday conversation for us. I mean, I grew up thinking about God and angels and demons and the end of the world and, you know, a great cosmic plan. And I think I was in fourth grade. It was the first year I went to public school. And I found some books in the library over in the fairy tale section, but they were myths. They were, you know, other cultures' stories that they told themselves to explain how the Earth got here and how humans got here. And I read Native American myths and Japanese and Haitian, which were among my favorite. I read Russian and I read French and I read German and I read all these different stories from, you know, India and China and all over. And I loved it. I love Greek mythology. I love those stories. I loved them when we did them in high school. I already knew them by high school, though, because I'd found them on my own. I lied to my mom in fourth grade and told her that I had a project on Egypt and the pyramids so that I could get a whole bunch of books from the library on mummification and the Egyptian gods. And, you know, I was fascinated looking at, you know, these lists of gods and, you know, what they looked like and, you know, how they were these very specific gods, you know, the goddess of fertility, the god of agriculture, the god who makes it rain, you know, brother sky. It wasn't, you know, most of these didn't have a single deity. It wasn't monotheistic like my faith, which was why it seemed obvious to me that those were all wrong and mine was right. But first, it's just religion has always fascinated me. You know, obviously I don't believe in, you know, God or a soul or an afterlife or a spiritual realm or any of that. But I still find it fascinating that other people do. I still enjoy, you know, the mental experiment or the thought exercise of contemplating different ideal paradises or heavens or, you know, how God could have done things to make the world different or, you know, how do Christians explain the Holocaust? You know, it's interesting because it is this way of understanding someone. Like, I thought when I was a kid that reading the folk tales and fairy tales of different cultures would sort of give me an insight into their values and how they saw themselves as a people and by the stories that they told themselves and told each other. And I still think there's something to that. And the religious stories we tell each other are no different. You can go on Sunday to 10 churches just on my block and find 10 different messages. You know, the typical, you know, Baptist church you're going to find in the South is nothing compared to the Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas. You know, just there's no consistency. There's no single vision, not even within Catholicism. The Vatican changes its mind. The popes change, and suddenly the infallible Word of God changes too. I find it, you know, interesting, but also scary. It's fine to me that people tell these stories and they communicate their values through these stories, whether their values are good or bad, because if they didn't believe the stories were true, then they wouldn't try to shape their values to the stories. They would just find the stories that fit their values and tell those. So I can't really answer for any other atheists, but the main reason that I spend so much time talking and thinking about religion is because it fascinates me. I spent 25 years believing, now I don't. I want to know what it would have taken to get me to stop believing sooner, how I can help other people quit believing, because being an atheist has improved my life so much. I am free of the yoke of Christ. I'm unburdened by that religious guilt. I get to love me. I get to treat my mental illness instead of getting demons cast out of me. I get to take care of myself and not be selfish. I don't have to put an imaginary fucking God before me in my life, or before my son or my loved ones. I get to pick what's important, what my purpose is. I don't have some sky daddy slave master like Rick Warren, who's got a purpose for all of us and a very specific plan and plotted out every second of our lives to fulfill his ministry. I don't want that kind of God, and I want to know why other people do and how I can help them to not need that. Because, of course, at the end of the day, I do think that religion is destructive. It's a delusion, which is problematic. There are a lot of us with mental illness in churches and synagogues and kingdom halls, and it's torture. You know, especially in, you know, Scientology or Christian Science or my cult, anything that doesn't allow you to use medication. You know, in my group, we weren't allowed to use therapy. You know, there's a lot of limitations within religion that are put on, you know, humanity's ability to care for ourselves and others. Religion stifles that, and it inhibits it. And there are kids that die every fucking year here in the U.S., in Australia, anywhere on the globe, of medical neglect for religious reasons. You know, people who try to pray away their kids' disease and it doesn't work. Or parents who just never take their kids to a doctor and they die of diabetes that's totally undiagnosed at age 9. I mean, I didn't get my OCD diagnosis till I was 21. I never had immunizations as a kid. I, you know, born at home, had a total, you know, I didn't have a social security card or a birth certificate until I was 4. I mean, I was just off the grid. And that wasn't a decision that my parents should have gotten to make, to not register me, to not enroll me in some kind of school. You know, we allow so many families to homeschool. And while I support that, I think that there should be national education standards. There needs to be certification program for parents in order to be approved as educators. It can be an online class. It can be $5. It can be free. I'm not trying to make it harder for people. I'm just trying to make sure that we aren't raising up a whole new generation of the kids like the ones that were in my cult, who I was giving them secret reading lessons when they were 9 and 11 and 12 and 13 years old and still hadn't learned how to fucking read because their parents were scared of any book that disagreed with their God or their religion. And they were more concerned with their children being obedient than educated. So, yeah, that's why I talk about religion all the time, because first, it's interesting, and second, it's fucking dangerous. So I want to get everybody to the point eventually where we're all just like, wow, wasn't that an interesting, you know, set of stories? The way we say about Greek mythology. We enjoy them for the stories that they are and for the fables and parables that they tell. We like the just so stories and explanations for the seasons and, you know, how the world came to be. If only we could view all religion that way, then we could all just find it interesting together, and there would be no reason to fight about it. That's all. I hope you have a great and godless day.
Okay, so you could hear there towards the end, about a minute before the end, the resentment in her voice towards her parents, the way she was raised, etc., etc., etc. And again, she's off into a new cult. Cult of atheism. Cult of abortion. And, you know, I don't, she probably doesn't realize it yet. You know, and she may or may not ever realize it. So, anyway, so what is the answer? You know, the answer, you know, I am not advocating religion, you know, churches and religion. I've always been grateful. You know, when I was a kid, my parents never crammed any kind of religion down my throat. I went to vacation Bible school. I always enjoyed that in the summer. My parents moved around all the time, and so we were in all these little different towns in Kansas, rural Kansas. But I've always been grateful that I was never raised, quote unquote, in a church. And so I never had the religious dogma crammed down my throat. And so I've been sort of free to pursue my own beliefs. And, you know, so what is the answer? The answer is not going to a church. It's not to be found in the church. You know, you're not going to find it there. And you're not going to find it in an abortion clinic. You're not going to find it, you know, in a group of atheists on the internet. And you're not going to find it by spewing out your resentful words. And then, you know, and of course, that's also, she feels it necessary to kind of spew out the F word. And that that's an indication to me that she is, you know, in her own mind, she's still trying to fight her parents and her relatives. You know, and she thinks she's trying to offend them somehow by spewing out the F-bomb. But she's just in another box. She's not free. She's not a free thinker. You know, and so, what is the answer? Well, the answer lies in giving up resentment. And so, I've played this before, and I'm going to play it again. It's about 13 minutes and 27 seconds. It's Roy Masters on the radio, and he is kind of teaching this woman how to meditate. And, you know, meditation, you really don't have to, you know, it works whether you believe in God or not. And there's no religious words about it. It works whether you believe in God or not. You don't have to believe in God. But nonetheless, this works either way. So I'm going to go ahead and play this. This, again, it's about 13 minutes and 27 seconds. And so here we go.
Author, network television guest, it's time for Advice Line. Here's your host, Roy Masters.
All right, now, I want to find out if Whitney is back on the phone.
I'm here.
Hello, Whitney. How's the baby?
Well, I hope he's distracted long enough.
Okay, good. How do you feel now? You've got a little load off your chest, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Feel a little better now?
Yes, I'm excited, and I have a feeling in my chest of I don't know if
it's something about something good. Something good is about to happen.
I hope so.
I know so. Now, I want you to do me a favor. Where are you sitting?
In the office, in a chair.
Okay. Put your telephone in your left hand. Put your right hand hanging down on your side, if possible.
Okay.
Okay, now. I want you to promise me something. That you will not try hard to do anything I say. Try hard to do anything I say. I don't want you to be willful about any outcome. I want you to expect nothing.
Okay? I'll try.
No, see, you're trying already. Maybe that's just a word. A misunderstanding, not the quite right word for it. I want you to go along with a few words that I say, but no trying. It's going to be very, I'm not going to ask you very much. And I want you to not have any anticipation of any outcome. And that's the way you will be able to help me. Help you. Now, close your eyes. You didn't promise me.
Okay.
You know, all you have to do is listen to my voice. Let it go through. Do the best you can. And if you're not able to do it, then you're not able to do it. But then you just keep doing it. Without putting any will into it. You follow that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, with your eyes closed, I want you to look at your eyelids. I want you to look at your eyelids. Now, I'm going to tell you, while I'm sitting here, I'm doing the same thing. I'm sitting at my desk, sitting in front of a microphone, talking to you, listening to the telephone. And I feel I'm a person within a person. Just like you feel like a person within a person. So when you're looking at your eyelids, you're looking at light. Do you see light in the middle of your forehead? Do you see how your forehead lights up? You may have
yes,
seen it
I
before.
Do.
Yeah. You
yes.
may have seen it before, but didn't know what it was.
Yes.
Now, that light, just by looking at your eyelids, that's all. That wasn't hard, was it?
No.
You are now in a meditative state. You are beginning in a meditative state. You're almost there. It means you're a person looking at your physical self. And what you're looking at now, that like a big TV screen that's on but no picture, and just little pixels flowing across the screen. You've seen that before. That is programming from God. Just like a streaming from God. Just like a satellite. Your mind is a satellite dish. And from the divine sky, what you're looking at is who you're going to be. But there's no way you can interpret that. The only way that you know it's there is because you know that you know, and you won't know why you know. You just see it and you know it, but you just know it, and it doesn't matter how you know, you just do. And you will depend on that kind of knowing, and be careful not to be resentful towards people who will try to make you doubt that knowing. Anyone who tries to make you doubt that knowing or intimidate you, I want you to just look at them, you know, with that knowing way, and see their mouth opening and closing, and seeing the mistakes they're making, and just watch them without judging them. That's called discernment. That is a gift. That is a power. Unbelievable power that you do not know you have. You will not feel this power. But other people will see you watching them, and it will affect them. See, and it will stop them from hurting you. Meanwhile, I want you to do something. I want you to be, you're looking at your forehead now. What you really are looking at also is basically you're looking at your brain. You're looking at your brain. And see those little pictures sometimes flit in and out. You're right at the surface of your brain. You're not involved in your thinking. You're the thinker, not the thinking. There's two of you. There's the spirit and the body of the spirit. and the mind, which is flesh, and the mind that is spirit. One looks at the other. So now you're detached. Now be aware of your right hand and your first finger. And just by being aware of your first finger, it will tingle. Tell me when that happens. The same thing that's going on in your head will go on in your finger. You're transferring energy down there. Tell me when you got a little tingling. You got it?
Yes.
And now transfer to the second finger. Move it to the next finger and let me know when you've done that.
Okay.
And the third finger. It's not hard. It's easy, isn't it?
Yes.
It's only by being aware that you bring the energy. And now you're having new energy. And now your whole body is being programmed. If you keep doing that, you may feel warm all over doing it. Sometimes you may happen today. It may happen when you do it on your own. But until you feel your left, your right little finger. Got that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, while I'm talking to you, be aware of your eyelids and your forehead. And that's what it'll seem. It'll seem like you're looking at a big screen. There's no thoughts there, but you hear my voice there. And because I'm speaking to your soul directly, and you hear my English, and you know what I'm saying, you're trained to know these words. But these words will affect you in a very special way. I'm talking to your soul, and as I talk to your soul, I'm also in command of your thinking in a good way. I can order the bad thoughts away and ask the good self to come in. And that's what's going to happen. Now, understand that 2,000 years and 9 years ago, you were forgiven. All the future generations were forgiven in that moment. And you know of whom I speak. And so therefore it is not true that God does not forgive you. You all have already been forgiven. And all you have to do is know that and believe it. And all your problems go away. All the anger goes away towards your parents. They are no more in you. The spirit dwells within you. And you will feel a burden lift. And to hold on to this precious gift, you have to realize that as yourself, people don't see the harm they do. Your mother didn't know the harm she did. I'm sure you did some of your own harm. You took your frustrations. You trusted all the wrong people. You got angry with the fact that they didn't love you in the way and took advantage of you. And it's a whole lifetime of those kinds of things. But you did not realize that you cannot, there's no love out there in the world. It doesn't matter whether people love you. You have to learn to not resent them, because you can love people by being kind and thoughtful. But you can also love them by being outspoken and not being affected by their cruelty. You must not lay it to them. You must hold yourself up as a light, and so that they see themselves as in a mirror. And if they're good, they'll come around to appreciate that you stood your ground and bless you for seeing their reflection and understanding their problem. See, and if they're not good, your goodness will penetrate them, and you won't see it happening. It'll spin them around, and what they wish on you will happen to them, as in revenge is mine, saith the Lord. I pay back. Open your eyes.
I feel a warmth in my chest.
Yeah, it's different than it was before, right?
Yeah.
That's like a second brain. That's where you feel your suffering in there. Much of your conflict you feel there. With the fears and shock, your brain doesn't feel pain. The brain is the feeler of pain.
My hand is so warm and I want to cry.
Feeler of pain.
My hand is so warm and I want to cry.
Then you can now cry. Because that's repentance. You're sorry, but not sorry for yourself.
Yes.
You okay?
I am.
You are. Now, listen carefully. There's nothing for you to do except watch the fireworks. Watch the fireworks in your brain. Watch the voices. Watch the thinking. And forgive them, meaning watch them, and there's a light coming through the watching. See, meaning your eyes will see by solar light, but your soul sees by something like infrared light. And that infrared light shines on something like infrared light. And that infrared light shines on the intent of people, and it's very healing, just like my light shines in you. See? And it's compatible with the light of both of us. See that?
Yes.
I know what to say to you, see? And you know,
so
and you know how to hear it. Hmm?
Yes, it's been so difficult because I have every distraction being thrown at me in my
body. I know, that doesn't matter. That didn't matter a bit. I heard it. It didn't mean a thing. It's happened.
Okay.
Are you okay now?
I think so.
Call me tomorrow.
Okay.
I just did with you. Do that a couple times a day. And you'll be okay for the rest of your life. You don't need me anymore.
Okay. Thank you very
much. You're welcome. Anybody did that? It was a little imperfect. Welcome. Anybody did that? It was a little imperfect. Did anybody follow that concept? Anybody wants to call me and say, I did that? What would you be afraid of? Did I say anything wrong? Did I ask for any money? Did I want something from her? Did she get anything from me? Possibly. But I hope it wasn't. I hope it was from within, and keep nothing of that for myself. Meaning that if you know that you can love, respect me and love me, but and don't think that I'm the one that did the healing. I'm only the instrument of it. It's very important that you don't have me on the pedestal, because the minute you do that, your benefit goes away. All right, now let's make a break, and I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay, so that's how you do it, and that leads to clear. If you really, really want to begin to think outside the box, that's the way to do it. It's to practice that meditation, on a regular basis, and nothing else is really required. You know, you don't have to join anything. You don't have to. You know, you don't have to do anything other than that. It's just that meditation is a very effective means of becoming objective towards your thoughts and your thinking and so on and so forth and memories and God knows what else. That's really what you need to do. And if you can gain that objectivity, then you can learn to live in the moment and really begin to truly think outside the box and live your life outside the box. But otherwise, you know, resentment ties you and keeps you in, you know, all boxed up, all bottled up, never to escape. As long as you don't become objective. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.